Welcome back to the Talking Stocks podcast. My name is Joe, beside Todd Campbell, as always, on your screens and in your ears. Todd, how are you this week?
I'm doing okay, Joe. And you know, the funny thing is that just the last couple of weeks, we've gotten the, as you hit the click record button, Zoom tells me it's now recording.
Yeah, it's a little obnoxious. I wish there was a way to shut it off, but there I don't think there is.
And I'm sure one of our savvy listeners who's Zooming all the time is like, oh yeah, you just have to disable it in the blank blank. But I did that, just made me laugh when we first started doing the show. So Joe, how are you? It's great to be back with you once again.
Yes, I'm doing very well. It's been a short week, but a fairly busy one. I made a few trades over these past 4 days, Tuesday through Friday, and I know you did as well. So we want to talk about those at a point later in the show. So just to give you all our little agenda for today, we're going to talk about Amazon, because as you all know, most likely Jeff Bezos is now out as CEO. This was obviously planned. So we're going to talk about what that means for Amazon, which is also a high scoring stock in our research at this time. We also want to talk about a newly public company, Didi, which is a Chinese company. And so we're going to talk a little bit just generally about Chinese companies and how we kind of feel about investing in them. Then we'll get into our trades this week. I'm not gonna give you any spoilers. You'll have to keep listening or keep watching for those. And then we'll get into our smattering. I think we have 10 top stocks. So let's start with Amazon. So Jeff Bezos is out. Todd, I don't remember the name of the new CEO. Help me out if you know it. If not, we'll just admit that we don't know what we're talking about.
New CEO, blank, blank, blank. It's, you know, it's so funny when you'll have to do a quick Google search.
Don't worry, I'll Google it right now.
It's so amazing to think about how much value is created for Amazon shareholders under Bezos's leadership since you know,
the Andy Jassy is his name. I'm Andy probably Jassy. Botching that pronunciation, Jassy.
And do you see a press release there saying where he came from?
I believe he was promoted from inside the company. But
well, that's good, because you know, you helping this, because there's advantages to doing that. A lot of times companies that aren't successful will bring in someone from the outside that has a successful track record.
Yeah.
When a company is successful, promoting from within makes sense, because the person who is taking over understands the businesses, where the pain points are already, what's going well in the direction, but also probably brings a little bit of fresh blood to it, because now they can say, geez, all these things that I wanted to get done, but I wasn't the one with the final stamp of approval, I can now get done. And, you know, if you look at Canslim, which is William O'Neill's way of looking at stocks, I mean, one of the things that you want to look for to meet the Canslim criteria is something new. And one of the things that O'Neill pointed out was new CEOs oftentimes help spark rallies. And I think that, you know, that's a great point for me to bring up the chart of Amazon. So Joe, can you see the chart?
I sure can. All right. And that's quite a movement over the past few days.
Right. And if you look right here, Joe, I'm pointing right at the arrow for people who are listening on the podcast. Obviously, if you're on YouTube, you can see it. New CEO. And look at the volume just absolutely surge on those 3 days after the official date of the new person at the helm. And breaking out, Joe, if you look at a monthly chart, look at that monthly chart. All-time highs.
Yeah, that's a nice looking chart right there.
And they say, Joe, that the bigger the base, the higher into space, is the Wall Street saying. And
I like that.
Base goes all the way back to July of 2020. So almost a year that we're breaking out of this nice long base. So Amazon, we talked about this show in our smattering from 6/21. I think June 21st was the day that we highlighted it as improving in the research and offering an opportunity to buy. And you can see right here, that was here around, the high of the day was 35.07. We're now at 37.29. So we'll declare a little bit of victory there. But I think this is, you know, we've talked about this before. This is, for me, this is one of those forever stocks. You know, buy it, sit on it.
Yep. It's definitely not going anywhere. So just to answer your question from a couple of minutes ago, the new CEO, Andy Jassy, led Amazon Web Services since 2003. So he definitely knows the company inside and out, knows the people he's working alongside and above. And he's also chairman of the board now. So yeah, it'll be an interesting one to watch. It could definitely be a case study in future business school classes. So it'll be a fun one to watch.
A lot of people, Joe, like to think that Amazon's best days are behind it, right? But I always come back to this, and it's obviously the last year with COVID kind of accelerating a lot of e-commerce buying and activity. They pulled forward a lot of sales, got a lot of people maybe to go online, buy from them rather than going to Walmart. But Walmart, and this usually surprises people, Walmart still does more in revenue, people, than Amazon. Matter of fact, last quarter, Joe, Walmart did $40 billion more in revenue than Amazon.
That's impressive.
And the other thing that we have to realize is that a lot of Amazon's revenue is coming from AWS, right? Their cloud services business. And, you know, it also gets a lot of money from Prime, which, you know, you get the entertainment aspect of it. So it's kind of like combining together, you know, Netflix, you know, the cloud services part of Google, if you will, and the e-commerce giants. So there's a lot of different, you know, they like to call it optionality, right? So there's a lot of optionality that we've seen with Amazon.
That's right. And it's clear that Amazon is probably one of the best companies in the world of just maintaining several massive revenue streams. Obviously, they have the whole e-commerce portion, but then people oftentimes don't realize how big and how successful AWS is. I know back in, I think, like the early to mid 2010s, AWS was basically like the sole driver of Amazon's profit. I don't remember the specific numbers, but I remember hearing for a long time that the retail business was, the e-commerce business, that is, was actually not profitable, but AWS was bringing in like tens of billions of dollars in profit and basically propping the whole company up.
Yeah. And just so our listeners know, AWS generated $13.5 billion in revenue for Amazon last quarter alone. So
that's remarkable.
That's remarkable. 27, so 54 billion a year run rate.
Yeah. So it's like they're like they have a cloud storage and a web hosting and server company that's as big as probably Oracle wrapped up in everything else they do. It's mind-blowing how big they are.
It is. And I mean, you get the now the shipping aspect of it, you've got, you know, Whole Foods. We never even talk about Whole Foods, which they always
do, right? Yeah, we just got a new Whole Foods in our area, opened 2 weeks ago, I believe, down in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. So yeah, Whole Foods is still growing.
My wallet gets empty just driving by it.
What's that?
My wallet gets empty just driving by that place. Oh my God.
Yeah, I know.
Definitely not for the penny pinchers among us.
No, for sure. I'm sure there are a lot of large luxury SUVs in that parking lot right now.
Yeah, it's going to be right. Getting Costco maybe a run for its money in our local town for, you know,
SUVs. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. So let's charge ahead. And I'm trying to decide which one we talk about first. I don't think I even mentioned Generac in our intro. So let's talk about Generac. Interesting company. We were talking before we started recording that there's a very strong seasonality associated with this stock. So basically, Generac, if you're not familiar, they make and sell generators for residential and commercial use. And so I thought this was an interesting one to bring up today, as we here in New England are getting the remnants of a tropical storm. And as we're recording this, people throughout Southern New England are currently losing their power. And so, yeah, here is the Generac seasonality. So you can definitely see June, July, August, hurricane season. October is an interesting month there, but we were talking before we brought up the chart, we were talking about like, I was kind of speculating they're going to be summer and winter are going to be the two strong seasons because hurricanes and winter storms, ice storms, blizzards, etc. That's not exactly how it ended up working, but the summer seasonality is really, really strong. And Todd, if you could pull up the chart for Generac too.
I will.
It's a really impressive chart.
Yeah, just to give our listeners a little bit of a feel for this. I mean, I was thinking about how much demand there could be for external sources of power production when you think about what's going on right now with the drought in the Midwest, or when you think about the ice storm and what happened with power in Texas. And we talked about that on the show, you know, when that happened. But I mean, you know, a lot of the power that's generated for California comes from hydro. And, you know, with the drought conditions the way they are, you have to wonder at what point do people really, really ramp up redundant sources of power? And if we are going to have massive heat, you know, the use of air conditionings and everything else going up, I mean, that's a huge variable demand driver. Freeberg, actually, from the All In podcast, if people follow him on Twitter, had a great tweet thread on you know, drought in California and what it could mean. And I think that, you know, I can never say it right. Generac typically does well in we just talked about the summer seasonality with the hurricane season, how that oftentimes will force or drive people to, you know, get the supplementary sources of energy. It's over the last 10 years, Joe, up 7 of the last 10 third quarters with an average return of 12.5% and a median return of about 11%. And let me go ahead and pull up for our listeners. Let me go ahead and pull up the chart of that. I'll go ahead and share my screen. While I'm doing that, just a quick shout out to thank everybody for their support on both the podcast and on our YouTube channel. We're just thrilled to see so many people engaging with us on YouTube and through the pod. And please smash the like and subscribe to see all the content. We're doing our best to try and keep you in the know with our weekly chat about stocks. So here's the chart I'm showing for Generac, and you can see it's already had a huge move, Joe. Breaking out of that base around 365 that had been forming since February, did that in mid-June, and then it's been pretty much a straight line up from there with only 3 down days since, when is that? Since June 9th.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, and this is a very profitable company. I mean, look at the year-over-year revenue growth in the March quarter, 70% year-over-year revenue growth. And if you look at the earnings growth, in 2021, up 55% expected to $10. And in 2022, growing an additional 13% to $11.38 is what's forecast. But yeah, you know how I love those blue on MarketSmith anyways. Instead of green and red, they did blue and red. I just love those blue bar volume days on these up days and just not a whole heck of a lot energy to sell it.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're predicting another above average active hurricane season. So assuming that's what's, you know, that's what's driving Generac's summer seasonality, definitely worth looking into. I added it to my watch list earlier this week, and I'll probably look for a down day at any point in the next several weeks, say until the end of July, to enter, whether it's a, you know, 1.5% to 2.5% down day. We'll see if we get one.
Yeah, ideally, Joe, what I would be looking for here is a pullback to the 21-day moving average, which in this case would be about an 8% pullback. Ideally, if it can touch that 21-day moving average, bounce around and rally off of that, that would be awesome. They typically don't stay, you know, multiple moves above the 21-day moving average forever. The 21-day moving average catches up to it,
yep,
or it falls to.
Gotta come back to Earth at some point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I think we can wrap up that conversation and we can pivot over to, well, we can pivot overseas. We want to talk about Chinese Chinese companies, Chinese ADRs that we can buy in our portfolios. Maybe maybe we shouldn't. We'll see. So, Todd, I wanted to just use the example of Didi, which is a newly public Chinese ADR. I believe they're considered the Chinese Uber, and a gigantic market cap, huge volume. You know, the typical high hype IPO these days, and has been getting a lot of attention on social media, you know, Twitter, Reddit, etc. But we're a little hesitant to hop on the bandwagon, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, there's this temptation that you've got to buy every dip, and you know, maybe not. Okay, not all dips are created equal, and one of the biggest problems that we have as investors in Chinese companies is, obviously we've seen things with Luckin Coffee, et cetera, where there are concerns about the accounting and whether or not we're actually hearing the real story. You know, are these companies really putting out the numbers, generating the numbers that they're telling us that they're generating? That's not the case here in Didi. Didi, it ran foul of, for whatever reason, ran afoul of Chinese regulators, and them saying, Chinese regulators saying, you know, you didn't check mark this box where we wanted to see you do X, Y, Z before listing. And as a result, we're going to slap you on the wrists. And as we're going to slap you on the wrists, we're going to slap all of the underwriters, and we're going to slap all the shareholders in the US on the wrist for this, you know, this, what you did. And then today we got news that they just, Chinese Cyberspace Administration said it called for the removal of 25 Didi-related apps from the App Store. The 25 apps appear to have serious violations of laws and regulations in connecting and using personal information, according to a China regulatory website. No website or platform shall provide access and download services for the 25 apps that have been removed from the App Store. And totally unexpected. I mean, yes, I'm sure that somewhere in the offering document, it said something about Chinese regulation being one of the risks. But I mean, come on, you know, you go public and then right away, all of a sudden, the rug gets pulled out from underneath you. I mean, what does this do for investor confidence for any IPO coming out of China? And then to take that one step further, what does that mean for any, you know, currently traded Chinese company? I mean, can you really, as an investor, sleep well at night with the risk that on any given morning you could get told that, you know, your company can't do XYZ any longer?
Yeah, it's there's a lot of uncertainty. Personally, I don't own any Chinese company. I wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole, for really a variety of reasons. So yeah, here's another reason right here. So Didi opened at about, I imagine it must have been $18. Do you see what the open price was there, Todd?
Yeah, it looks like about $18 is what it traded to on the high on the day of its IPO. It IPO priced at $14.
Okay. And now we're down below $12.
Yeah.
And although we're up 6% today for whatever reason.
We are up 6% today. Dead cat bounce? I don't know, Joe. I mean, I just think, how can you trust? I just can't trust it. I can't trust it.
Already with a 57 billion market cap too, which is just outrageous. So yeah, even Todd, do you own any Chinese ADRs? Do you own like Alibaba, anything like that?
None.
No? Yeah, none. Me neither. And none. I don't plan to.
I contemplated, and the one that I'm probably most interested in is NIO.
Yeah,
which is the electric car company that has a really unique way of, I mean, you basically buy the shell and you can just swap out your battery at a store, like you're getting an oil change.
Yeah,
they'll swap out the battery for you. I think that's fascinating. They sell a lot in China and hoping to move into Europe with sales. I'm intrigued by that company, but again, the risk for me is still too high that, you know, something, I could wake up one morning and, you know, someone at the, you know, Jack Ma moment or something, somebody says something that, you know, somebody else in the political sphere of China doesn't like, and then the business is somehow impaired. And how do you model for that?
Right.
You know, I mean, you can control, I suppose, by controlling your position size, you know, okay, I'm only going to expose 3% of my capital to it. So the worst I can lose is 3%. But wouldn't I rather just have that 3%? And it's not like there's a shortage of great growth companies that I could invest in.
Right. We see upwards of 100 stocks every week in our best scoring by sector report. And yeah, I think this is, I'm setting up for a good segue into our trades for the week, because I've been trying to just buy stocks that are on our best scoring lists. DD obviously won't be there because it's an IPO, also because it's there's just so much political uncertainty. The other thing I just wanted to touch on before we move on is one of the things that people forget about these Chinese companies is that the Chinese business people, whether they're CEOs, CFOs, they have a habit of mysteriously disappearing, which is not great for the company. I can't remember the specific example, if it was Jack Ma or if it was somebody else, but they can get detained by the Chinese government for no particular reason. They can end up going into hiding, but just completely disappearing. It would be like if Tim Cook just didn't show up to work at Apple one day and nobody could track him down. And then it turns out he was being held prisoner by the United States government at some facility in the Great Plains. A pretty general example of why we tend to avoid those Chinese ADRs. There are a lot of, if you're looking for ADRs, there are a lot of much better investments out there that we publish every week in our ADRs report.
Right, and linked for a free trial below, right, Joe? I mean, we do this every week. So if you haven't signed up for the free trial, please go ahead. It's no harm, no foul. You can just cancel it if you don't like what you see. But the best and worst ADR list comes out every week, and it shows you plenty of non-China stocks if you want foreign exposure.
Yep.
That don't have those same risks.
That's right. So let's get into our trades for this week. So I thought this might be a fun thing to do a little bit more often than we ordinarily would. I think there are a lot of folks out there, viewers, listeners, Discord server members, Twitter followers, who are interested in specifically what Todd is buying and selling these days. And so Todd, I know we both made a few trades this week. I bought two stocks and sold one. I don't know about you, but I want to start with the one that I know we both bought, which is Duluth. So we talked about Duluth in our smattering last week, from July 2nd, as an interesting, potentially seasonal play, but a very high scoring stock. I believe it still has a 95 or 100 in our research, one or the other. So I bought on, I believe it was Tuesday, which would have been the 6th. Yeah, the 6th.
You're in probably somewhere around 19.
Yeah, I can actually tell you. And you know, Joe,
you mentioned it. We both bought it. You bought it on Tuesday. I actually bought it today.
Very nice.
And on the show, I think I had said, and I'm probably going to buy this, and I'm going to buy it in the high 18s. And I think my high price, it's $18.94 right now. I think I paid like $18.90.
I paid $18.63.
No, oh, yeah,
gotcha, you got feet. Me, Joe. You
got me. Nice job.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this is again, 21% year-over-year revenue growth in the quarter ending April, expected to grow earnings 67% in fiscal 22 and another 43% in fiscal 23. Great chart set up with lots of buy day volume, not a lot of volume recently on some of the sell days. And, you know, I think, Joe, people have money in their pockets, right? And they want to spend it. And, yep, you know, people are going to spend it on things like, you know, buck naked underwear.
That's right. From those fantastic ads that seem to be everywhere. Yes, the buck naked underwear. I might have to get myself a pair of those. Never tried them before. So that's the first one. Next, I also bought CrowdStrike, which we talked about, I don't think it was last week. I think it was the week before. Yeah, June 25th. I have it here in my notes. So also another high scoring, much stronger seasonality on this one, I think, just because it's a tech play. So we talked about this a couple weeks ago again. A cybersecurity company, one of the major players in that industry. And again, this week we heard about another massive cyber attack. So they're not going anywhere. Those Russians are hard at work on their keyboards and their bunkers in Siberia or wherever the heck they are. But yeah, it's something that is really keeping businesses on their toes right now.
Yeah, and I'm long this. I think I bought it back last month. I'm long this as well, Joe. It's a relatively recent buy for me. And you know, when we recorded the show a couple of weeks ago for the Smatter, and we talked about it, I think one of the things I had asked you is, what do you think is the pace going to accelerate or decelerate, and are they going to get more and more complex, these threats? And you know, I think the answer to both of those you said was yes. There's going to be more of them, and they're going to be increasingly hard to spot and derail. And I just really like the fact that with CrowdStrike, they're aggregating all of the experience that they're generating across their entire customer base to find and spot these. So you're leveraging your entire user base to find and react to these things relatively quickly. And again, really nice chart setup. Not a lot of volume on the sell days, very good volume on the buy days, breaking out to recent highs, 70% top line growth in the quarter ending April to $302 million. Looking at in fiscal 22, 44% EPS growth, and in fiscal 23, 79% growth. And I love that. When you see that accelerating expectation for earnings, it tells you that there are fixed costs that are going to be leveraged by the company. And whenever you can do that, listeners, whenever you can take a look back the last few quarters, then look forward a couple of years and see whether or not that pace of acceleration or deceleration, look for the acceleration in earnings and revenue growth.
Yeah. So there are two reasons why I like this stock. So obviously it's high scoring in our research, but also the people that Todd and I follow on FinTwit have been talking about this stock for ever since we started recording the podcast, and probably well before then. So the way I kind of use FinTwit is just as kind of like an idea generation sort of machine, in the same way that our paid service works. And it turns me onto some stocks that I wouldn't ordinarily look at, that might not be like top scoring in our research, but are still have very bullish trajectories. So this is that really kind of affirms my buy decision when I see that other people on FinTwit, whether it's Todd or whether it's, you know, Jonah Lupton or Jessica Oblamski, you know, people that we've had on the show in the past who are also buying this, who frankly have done a lot more research than I have and are a lot smarter than I am. When people smarter than me are buying a stock, I like to see that, and it'll definitely draw my attention to it.
Yeah, great ideas come from a lot of different places, people. I mean, absolutely, they're all around us, right? We see them in our lives, in our work lives, in our personal lives. We see them in the social interactions, and you know, like on Twitter or whatever, and FinTwit. And then, of course, services, great services out there like 7Investing. Obviously, we have a service as well. There's some great services out there. So yeah, CrowdStrike. I think I agree with you. I think that there's a lot of opportunity there. Did you say there was one more buy, or were those the only two that you did?
Those were the only two. So I'm in on CrowdStrike at 263.28. So I'm losing money, but not for long.
Yeah, and you got two down days here. You broke out to that new high. Usually when you move out into a pivot point, you can expect to have some people who've been riding it for a long time book some profits. That knocks it down a little bit. And then hopefully what you would ideal scenario from here would be you get the couple days down and then you start to reaccelerate again and really start to move up. I also bought two other stocks that we haven't mentioned this week. One I already owned and I added to on a big down day. That was Digital Turbine.
Yep.
APPS is the symbol there.
That was in our smattering last week, July 2nd.
Yeah, we talked about it on that big down day. It was down like 9%. I think at one point it got down 13 or 14%. I didn't buy it that day. I did buy it this week, I think. I'd have to go back and take a look at the exact date. And I don't know it off the top of my head, but I did increase my exposure to that because it's sitting right about on its 200-day moving average. I'll go ahead and pull up a chart on that one as well. So you can see, yeah, you can see how we got that big gap down day here on the second, rallied up the next day, gap down again, down, drop down, passing the 200-day moving average. And then today, currently up 2.6%, resting right on its 200-day moving average, 142% year-over-year revenue growth in the March quarter, 221 in earnings expected in 2023. That's up 47% from a doubling expected in 2022. So this is a 5G play. You know, they make money from monetizing apps, and they have relationships with all, with a bunch of different providers, you know, cell phone providers, et cetera. So they help with app discovery and the monetization of apps. And recently they've been doing a bunch of purchases for app advertising. So they're in that business as well. And then the other, cause we mentioned Duluth is one I bought. The other one I bought this week was Datadog, DDOG.
Another FinTwit favorite.
Yeah. This is one that I've wanted for a long time. It finally kind of meets all of the criteria that I was looking for. 51% revenue growth in the March quarter. Supposed to grow earnings in fiscal 22 by 88%. Love that. Got that nice big saucer as far as the chart formation, big saucer. So you got that peak in February around 120. You got the low in May around 70. And now you're coming up the right side of that. And you may make a handle, I don't know. Or you may just simply go straight back towards the 120. I'm not sure. But I figured, hey, okay, it's time to finally get this one into the portfolio. And, you know, basically what they have is a platform that allows you to have greater insight into, you know, your network. So, you know, you get to know where your pain points are within your network and be able to react to any pain points that you see relatively quickly. So DDOG is the one I bought there. So like you, Duluth, and then I added to my Digital Turbine apps as a symbol there. And then I also picked up Datadog, DDOG.
There you go. All right. So if you like our kind of rapid fire, throwing all sorts of stock ideas at you, I have good news. We're not done. I believe Todd has 10 stocks for our smattering this week. And so, yeah, here comes the list of stocks I might buy next week.
Yeah. Okay. So this is what I do every week, people. Okay. I go through and we do best and worst stocks by sector. So that's across all market caps. It shows them all to me. So I can look at basic materials. I can look at consumer goods. I can look at energy. I can look at REITs, services, tech, whatever. And I can see, okay, regardless of market cap, here are the strongest scoring in our research. So I scan through that. Then we also do report best and worst large cap, best and worst mid cap, and best and worst small cap. And we show the strongest sectors, the weakest sectors, the strongest industries, the weakest industries. And we always give a couple ideas in the industries. And oftentimes those industry ideas won't show up in the best stocks by sector group. So that's why I like to look at both of them and kind of go through and find different ideas that I can highlight for our smattering of ideas. And I use this to continually keep my watch list fresh because I believe that's so important. Got to always be hunting for new ideas that could really benefit your portfolio. So with that being said, and kind of a quick and dirty explanation of what my goals are there and how I do it, let's jump over and jump right in. First up, and you'll notice, Joe, we talked a couple of weeks ago about how I wanted to get more healthcare stocks into my portfolio. I wanted to build up my watch list of healthcare stocks. So you're going to notice here that I am indeed finding some healthcare stocks. You'll see a number of these 10 that we talk about today are going to fall within that sector. So if you're a healthcare investor, stay tuned because there's some good names in here. So Evolent Health, EVH is the symbol there, develops end-to-end built-for-purpose technology-enabled service platforms for value-based healthcare. Okay, so healthcare is provided either as a fee-for-service or they have these more recently, value-based incentive plans, especially for populations that tend to consume a lot of healthcare. So think of like the Medicaid population or the Medicare population. So Evolent Health has services and solutions that helps providers and payers like insurance companies manage those value-based plans. So if my assumption is that you know, fee for service, pay to go visit your doctor once, whatever, is not the best solution for kind of making sure that you're managing each patient and you're giving them the right amount of care, then this would be, I think, a good alternative. And obviously, you know, people agree. I mean, look at this. The revenue isn't there last quarter, but it did grow 15% year over year in the quarter prior to that. They are expected to turn a profit in fiscal 2022 after a string of multi-year string of losing money. And it's breaking out, Joe, here. 22.35 was the prior high in March. And today, up 4.3% to 23 bucks. And there's just no volume on these down days. So someone, in my view, I mean, look at all these spikes, 1.7 million back in February, 1.5 million back in March. These are volume spikes on up days. Someone's accumulating a position, in my view, an Evolent Health EVH. So I want to have that on my screen. Second stock, BioLife Solutions, BLFS. Hypothermic storage and biopreservation media for cells, tissues, and organs. Okay, so this is a company, think about it, we have gene therapies, all these things that are being developed, you know, using biologic stuff that can't be just left out. It needs to be either frozen or refrigerated.
COVID vaccines.
What BioLife does is it manages that end to end.
Yep. Right.
Freezers, the shipping of it, the thawing of it. Revenue up 39% year over year in the March quarter to 17 million and expected to earn 20 cents in fiscal 2022 and bumping its head right up here around 47, 48, which is where it peaked out in December or March. So look for a down day. That could be good. And look at Joe. Look at the buy volume days.
Wow. How many consecutive days is that?
One.
It's got to be like 12.
Three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13. It's like 15. Ooh. It's like 15
crazy
consecutive up days.
Yeah.
Including one really high volume up day on the 25th of June.
Yep.
And then, you know, a couple down days, but very low volume. And then four or five more consecutive up days, including an above average volume day yesterday, 2 days ago. A down day yesterday, and then today we're trading up about 2%. So this is one I think you can put on your watch list as well. And actually, these first three, Joe, are all small cap. So these are all coming from our small cap best and worst list. Forrester Research, you may have heard the name Forrester. A lot of companies will say, oh, you know, I ranked well in certain this, or Forrester Research says my total addressable market is that, or whatever. Well, that's what they do. They research technology companies, and they provide that research to, you know, various users. Could be on the financial service companies, it could be the technology companies themselves, whatever. Revenue up 7% last quarter. Earnings per share expected to grow 26% next year in fiscal 2022 to $2.07. Technically, you got a nice W formation, which you can see on our charts. If you go on YouTube and watch this on YouTube, you can see us showing the charts. And we're trying to test this $47 peak area from March. So I think that that's also one, Joe, that we can put on the list. Moving on to mid-cap. Energy. Energy still screens very high for us, even though we had that big battle between the different members of OPEC last week. They couldn't come to terms on how much they wanted to boost production going forward. And that does create some instability. So hopefully we'll get some price, some clarity into what OPEC's plans are in the next few weeks. But energy still screens really well in our research. And Matador is one of the top scoring in the mid-cap space. I don't want to look at the revenue when it comes to a cyclical like energy, because we're not really seeing that year over year explosion that we'll get from realizing the higher prices. But as we get higher crude oil prices, but as we get a couple more quarters in, we should see that really start to flow through and should see the revenue growth that I'm anticipating, double digit revenue growth for these companies. They make most of their money drilling for oil and natural gas in the Permian Basin. And that is one of the historically lower cost areas to be producing oil and natural gas. Expected to earn $3.90 in 2020. That's up 31% from 2021, which is up 440% from 2020. So you can see that explosion, Joe, of expected earnings because of the higher year-over-year change in oil prices.
Right. Yeah, we've talked about this one on the show before as well. I don't remember when, but back when we were really heavy on energy stocks.
Yeah, and I think it's just another one that you can sort of stick in there to for your portfolio there on the E&P side. All right, moving along here, Inari Medical. Symbol there is NARI. Inari Medical products to treat and transform patients with venous diseases. So, okay, rather than using an arterial device to remove a blood clot, they have developed devices that are specifically to be used in the venous system. So deep vein thrombosis, that kind of thing. And demand for it's very high. 113% revenue growth in the March quarter to 57 million, 27% EPS growth expected in 2022. And Joe, a lot of these companies could see resurging demand in the cardiovascular space because people, now that they're vaccinated, going back into their doctors, they're getting evaluated, they're getting their cholesterol screening, they're going and getting their stress tests. So a lot of this, I think we're going to see the number of procedures for cardiovascular procedures and including being the stuff that would Inari targets.
Yeah, more generally speaking too, like all those elective surgeries that people have been forced to put off for the past year or so, people are now gonna be going and getting whatever it is, knee replacement, hip replacement, and basically anything. So
Yeah, you can
definitely
bring
worth
right,
watching.
exactly. You can look pretty much throughout medical devices for and probably benefit from that trend, Joe, across the whole basket. CDNA is the next one, CareDx, and they are pre and post transplant knowledge, if you will. So, you want to get tested to make sure that, well, to find out first if if you need to have a transplant, a kidney transplant or something like that, and then you need to get matched. And then once you get the organ transplant, you need a good, you need technology and tools that help you monitor that transplant recipient. And this company does that. So CDNA revenue up 76% year over year to 67 million in the March quarter. Still loses money, but it should lose less in 2022 than it does in 2021. And again, with these kind of companies that are growing this fast, 76% revenue growth, all I'm looking for really there is a pathway to profitability. They don't have to be profitable yet for me. Now, your rules may be different, right? But everybody's rules are a little bit different. But for me, as long as I can see a pathway to profitability, I'm okay with it. Next one is Teradata. Well, I just typed in the wrong symbol there. Citigroup. Teradata, TDC. Okay. Enterprise data warehousing, including enterprise analytic technologies and services. This is an interesting one, Joe. Once upon a time, I was much more familiar with this company. It just sort of back on the radar now because it's showing up in the best list. And I started looking at this a little bit more, and I'm like, yeah, they if they're able to leverage information and provide insight on that information for their corporate clients that they other people can't they can't get elsewhere, maybe they are going to start to see a prolonged period of double-digit growth. And maybe we're starting to see that, Joe, because in the March quarter, we do see revenue growing 13%. In 2021, earnings are expected to grow 31%. And Joe, I'm just looking at the chart here. And look at this in February where they reported, I'm assuming that's their earnings report, big gap up and then three consecutive days. And just listeners, as a reminder, I don't remember if it was Marty Schwartz, but I think it might have been. When you get the third day, that's these big gaps, that's usually a good time to sell. So you sell on the third day if you're a shorter term position or swing trader. Anyways, you get that big gap up in February with 3 days, kind of trends downward to sideways until April when maybe it reported earnings again, Joe. Another big gap up. And then you have one, two, three up days. And then sure enough, starts to trade back down sideways, fills its gap. And then it's been climbing, climbing, climbing up through March, June, and now sideways pretty much since mid-June. But again, I see these big spikes. Someone out there is accumulating shares in Teradata TDC. And I think that this is a name that I want to have exposure to because of that. All right, pressing on, moving up in market cap to large cap. Summer is actually not a bad time of year for waste management companies. So, you know, there are three that screen high for us. I mean, you could just go to the biggest one, Waste Management, WM, and get involved with that. I mean, revenue's up 10% last quarter, year over year. And that's, I mean, think about it this way. You know, you've got people going back out to restaurants. You got a lot more trash being generated, a lot more getting picked up. A lot of new restaurants may open up in spaces that others have vacated. You've got a lot of construction debris from remodeling or from new home construction that has to get dropped in those big containers that they haul away. So Waste Management's a stock that screens well, I think you can pick up. You could also take a look at Republic Services. I'm just giving a bonus idea, RSG, and that's in that same space. U-Haul, Joe. You ever use a U-Haul?
I have.
Yeah, Americo is the name of the company. The symbol is U-Haul, U-H-A-L. Truck and trailer and self-storage room rentals for do-it-yourself moving and storage. Pretty self-explanatory business. 2022 expected to earn $32.55, up 4% from 2021. And the end of March quarter up 29% year over year to $1.1 roughly billion dollars in revenue. Again, I like when they rally up. See these multiple consecutive days up, Joe? One,
yeah.
2, 3, 6, 9, 10 up, right? Back above the 50, 21-day moving curling up, 200-day moving average still pulling up. And then we sold off on three consecutive days of lower down day volume. So I like that. That did, to me, again, that's you had a couple profit takers and then, but really not a whole heck of a lot of incentive to get out of it. So U-Haul is a name that I think you can throw on your list. And then in India, Dr. Reddy Labs. We were talking about ADR ideas earlier on. This is another one in the healthcare space. Indian developer of active pharmaceutical ingredients used in drugs. So, you know, they do generic drugs. They make the stuff that other drug makers use within their medications. And they operate in, you know, an area that is seeing a lot of demand for healthcare right now in medication because of COVID. So Dr. Reddy Labs, symbol there, RDY, 10% year-over-year revenue growth last quarter. And in 2022, expected to grow EPS 68% to $2.64. And again, nice buy volume days and not a whole heck of a lot of energy on the sell days.
All right. Well, if I count correctly, that is 10 plus the bonus, which makes it 11. So that is a wrap for our top stocks for the week. July 9th today is. With that, I think we will wrap up. Todd, any parting words of wisdom for us this week?
Just wishing Richard Branson, Virgin Galactic, good luck.
To the moon.
Upcoming launch into space.
This weekend, right? Did you find a
July
specific
11th.
Day? July 11th. Okay, so that's Sunday.
Memory serves me correct, something like that. So good luck to him.
Fun. Yeah, should be fun to watch. So with that, I think we will part ways with you all. And we will talk to you all next week. Have a good weekend, everybody.